Please. Welcome back to the next part of this Truth and Rhythm episode. Be sure to subscribe to this channel. If you've already done so, please share it with friends. Also become a member by joining Truth and Rhythm on Patreon or consider donating at funkinstuff.net. Thank you so much for your interest and support. Enjoy.
Did you ever see or get to meet Prince?
We did. Matter of fact, we shot... If there's a plaque there, and they actually honored it, they gave us a plaque that was going to hang up there at Paisley Park. The first music video shot at Paisley Park was Cross My Broken Heart. And I have footage of that. And it's funny because I remember when we got there to shoot the video, everyone was explaining to us that not even Prince has shot anything here yet. You're the first group to... shoot your video here, and they were still trying to get people to come to the studio outside of Prince to do their work there. And I remember Prince coming into the studio when we were, you know, recording the Believe album, and he had some songs for us. And unfortunately, we didn't use those songs. I think the content was very Prince, if you know what I mean. And we still respect that. But, you know, for my sisters to sing, they didn't feel comfortable with the subject matter. But it was a very, you know, Prince, it was great beats. It was amazing. But it didn't fit us at the time.
Mm.
Yeah. But Prince just came... Love the family, you know, and he understood that, you know, the Jets was coming out of Minnesota that didn't directly tie to him, but our ties was basically the engineer and the people that surrounded Prince, that worked with Prince. He knew that they were also working with us. And it was always... glad to just meet up with him and shake his hand. He's a very quiet person, you know, and very, very shy, so to speak. Yeah.
Hmm. Did you ever get to do any recording at Paisley Park?
Yes. We recorded a lot of the tracks for Believe album was recorded there at Paisley Park.
Okay. So David Z was involved in that one?
At that time, I think David Z moved on. I just remember in the studio, there were, I think, the bass player. One of the songs that was released that never went well, You Better Dance. We shot a video for that, but I think he had a lot to do with, I forgot the name of the bass player, but he was in Prince's band.
Oh, Brown Mark.
Yeah, yes, that's him. Sorry. And then we had some other producers that came, Vassal Benford, who also came to Minnesota to record Special Kind of Love. And he was a producer that also produced the girls group Jade in the early 90s. And he became a big producer in his own right. Vassal Benford, but I remember him coming to Paisley Park and working with us there at the studio.
Well, you know, I'm looking at Believe, the credits, and you had Michael Johnson on some of it. He was kind of from the hip-hop electro-funk yep. world and Pac Jam and songs like that. So you guys tried a little bit of a different style, kind of updating with a little bit of electro funk element in there. And, you know, what was going on in terms of, you know, your creative process at that point?
Yeah, that's a good question because, you know, when Believe came out, you know, we had two hit records, all went platinum, and we were trying to stay relevant at this point. And I remember just, we were burnt out kind of, so to speak. I mean, we were on three world tours coming back. And in that time period, I just remember, you know, everyone trying to figure out how to top what we just did in 1988. And so I just remember being in the studio. We went through a lot of songs. And the songs were, you know, we were trying to replicate, you know, Somebody to Love. Diane Warren, a great songwriter, wrote us a song, Same Love. And I just remember that for whatever reason, Believe didn't really do as well. And I think because we were, I don't know, I think when MCA at the time, they had a really big hit with Bobby Brown, Don't Be Cruel. And the focus, I just remember hearing just our manager saying, look, you know, we're going to have to fight to be relevant here. But I think our manager and the record label had different ideas for the Jets going forward. And so I don't think that the record label was behind the Believe album, because what was happening was, I think the record label wanted us to come to LA and work with other producers outside of the Minneapolis sound. And I just remember that being an issue, but we wanted to stay in Minnesota, stay away from all of that, and just stick with what we were doing. And so there was some tension going on. And I think I just remember hearing that, you know, the enthusiasm to push our singles from the Believe album wasn't as enthusiastic as it was previously on our first two albums. And so something happened where it just didn't happen. I mean, they sent out singles, and it was either the record label or the public just didn't get the songs that we were doing at the time. You know, we came out with You Better Dance. We came out with Same Love, and they were all from, you know, I just remember saying, oh, these are great songs, but it just didn't connect. I don't know if it didn't connect with the audience, with the public, or the label just didn't push it the way they were pushing the other records. Not only that, but a lot of the people that brought us to MCA were no longer there. They had left. And so you had Ernie Singleton who left. You had Lewell Silas. He was still there. But the main guy who brought us there, he had left to Motown. And so we had a lot of people that actually believed in us, had moved on to other record labels, and now we're dealing with new people at the label. And so, as you know, sometimes they will go with their new project as opposed to projects that were already there.
Yeah. And for whatever reason, often it seems like the end of a decade, beginning of another decade, music business has a lot of turmoil.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's exactly what happened. And so, and not only that, but we weren't getting along with our manager at the time. And there was just a lot of internal things happening. You know, when you go on a tour for a long time and you don't get the money sort situated, you know, we just found a lot of things that he did on our behalf that we weren't aware of. And even though he was a great manager that knew how to get us there, but when it came to the monies, that was the issue that kind of like, what happened to all that money? You know, we weren't into drugs or sex and all that stuff, but where did all that money go? You know? And so we had some people that worked for him that kind of let us know that, you know, this is what was happening. And then we ended up deciding to move on and leave Don Powell, even though he was a great blessing. He did a lot for our family, but we also wanted to grow and move and meet other people that they could help us.
Now, in during the peak years, though, who were a couple of the big acts that you went out on concert tours with?
So we went out with Gloria Estefan. We went out with Tiffany, Debbie Gibson, the New Kids on the Block. Matter of fact, the New Kids on the Block, they were our opening act. There was a few others. I mean, there was a mishap where we did a big concert in Hawaii with Kenny Rogers. And it was a mix-up because they thought that they were getting the Judds, a new group a family group, as you know, but they're all women. And we ended up doing a great concert with Kenny Rogers, even though, you know, they were trying to get the Judds. I don't know how that happened, but I just remember
it
that.
Sounds similar to Judds. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but we toured with them. We did a few things with, who else? Yeah, it was pretty much those groups that I Ready for the World, Exposé, Lisa, Cult Jam. those are all the groups that we did a lot of concerts with. They were fun. It was a fun time.
Yeah, Ready for the World was another MCA act.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, New Edition. We did a few shows with New Edition. Let's see, who else? Those are the only ones that I can think of right now.
Was there anyone in particular that you saw do their show and you were just kind of blown away?
Yeah, I think Janet Jackson, when she came to see us, and then to actually come and see her perform, that was amazing just to see that. The other group that we saw that just blew us away was, there's so many. I'll get back to that. I'm trying to think of who the other artists were that we saw that were amazing.
Is it true that the group's name came from the Elton John, Benny and the Jets song?
Yes, we were looking for a name that was simple, and our manager called us and said he was traveling. He says, "Hey, what do you think of the Jets?" And to us, I was like, "What? The Jets?" I heard the song Benny and the Jets, and Jets seems like a song that people can chant, and we can create a look, a cool look from the movie of the of what's that movie? Benny and the Jets was that was the main thing that inspired our manager to help us with that.
Well, the Jets is one of the gangs in West Side Story, which was a famous
West Side Story.
Yeah.
And if you look at our first album, well, it's not on our album, but when we did our promotional, we actually wore outfits that looked like we were the gang from West Side Story.
Okay. Yeah. Did you ever, your brother or sisters ever meet Elton John? I mean, do you know if he was aware that you guys kind of paid a tribute in that way?
We never got to meet him, unfortunately. I think the only person that we first met that was just amazing was Tina Turner. When we got signed to MCA Records, I remember going to her concert and getting a call 2 weeks later that we're actually going to open up for her in Iowa, in Ames, Iowa. And to see her on that amazing stage on her tour, and then her private dancer tour, and then to be on the private dancer tour as a warm-up act, oh, that was amazing. This is before we made it. This is before the record came. This is like in 1985, right before we came out. It was earlier on in that year that we actually performed with her. And that was an amazing, just to be there to see that happen.
Wow. Yeah, that's talk about a legend right there. I was curious, Rudy, you know, when I saw the timing wise, I was wondering if maybe like the rise of the boy bands kind of, you know, got you guys put to the back burner a little bit. It seemed like, you know, that was around the time when some of them were really
That's
getting big.
exactly right. I mean, I just remember when New Kids on the Block were on our tour, they were nobodies. And then a year later, in 1989, we were still doing 2,000 seaters. We were doing, you know, some arenas, depending on where we were at. But I remember they were our friends. And I just remember, you know, when we had days off, I would go and they were doing arenas. And all of a sudden they were doing stadiums. And then I knew that this was going to take over. And, you know, New Kids on the Block shifted all of the young girls away from the bands. And now it was all about, I mean, there was Menudo that came out earlier, but the New Kids on the Block, you know, I knew the New Edition was popular, but when the New Kids on the Block, they just took over. There was a time period from 1989 to 1991 or two when the New Kids on the Block just ruled everything. And then we were going down, and then grunge came right after that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's when we literally were gone. We knew that everything shifted away from the pop, the happy 80s to now more grunge. These were when all the grunge groups came out.
And rap, yeah.
Rap. Yeah. It wasn't no longer the happy rap. It was gangster rap that came out. And so it was amazing to see that transformation. And, you know, we were teenagers in our 20s. I mean, I remember being 21 and feeling like I was an old has-been. Because no one cared about our music right around 1993. The dark years that I consider very dark was 91, 92, 93, and 94 were just dark years for us because we went from a high of, you know, everything bright and with the 80s and then the dark early 90s. And then it came back, it shifted from that to another pop era of the late 90s. And that's when you had the Backstreet Boys and all of that era of pop coming back. But by that time, we were way has-beens at that time. And then now what's amazing is that the 80s are back. Everyone wants 80s again. And it went from no one cared about the 80s hiring the group. Now, you know, everyone wants to go back to that era. And I remember being on a cruise, the 80s cruise, and just, oh my gosh, it's amazing that it's come full circle. 80s yeah. are big now.
Yeah, everything's cyclical, right?
Yep.
And so I imagine you guys were, it was kind of like the child actors, you know, that are so popular when they're kids, and then they get to be an adult and they're like, what do I do? You know, and yeah.
That's exactly what happened to us. I mean, remember the 90s were a very dark time period until the 2000s came, the early 2000s came up, and all of a sudden people were saying, hey, we want 80s groups. And from now until now, it's just the same here. You know, when we do our show here in Las Vegas, and people just appreciate, they just love going back to that time period, the time period that I was so blessed to be a part of. And I just remember just thinking, man, we were so blessed. We didn't know that, you know, when I look back and all my kids, they love the music of the 80s, whether it's rock, R&B, new wave, all of that. It was just, to me, the 80s was the golden years. And then the 90s was the end of that golden year into the grunge era. And then all of a sudden, I can't even relate to what's going on today in music.
Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah.
You know, I got to bring up, Rudy, a couple of the performances you guys did just to get your take on them. You guys played the World Series and you played the Olympics, right?
Yes.
What were those experiences like?
Let me talk about the World Series. And I mean, I don't know if you saw or heard this, but, you know, when the World Series came to Minnesota, and our manager knew that, oh, we got to get them to sing the national anthem. And the commissioner at the time didn't really care for the Jets. And what was interesting was he said, okay, well, and we kept on begging, you know, we're part of this, is, you know, please let us sing for our team. And I just remember him saying, okay, well, if they win the World Series or go to Game 7, then, yeah, you'll sing Game 7, thinking that the Twins wouldn't go that long. Well, lo and behold, they went to Game 7, and we were there. And I just remember just being blown away that we got to sing the national anthem for the last game, and we won. And I just remember being there, just being a part of that. I mean, it was like, whoa, the Minnesota Vikings, we tried so hard football-wise, but then finally, Minnesota finally got some championship, the World Series in 1987. It was just beautiful.
Wow, that was the Kirby Puckett years, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I mean, it was just magical, just the fact that we happened to be there and to be able to sing the national anthem, then it was perfect.
Wow. And the Olympics?
The Olympics. We were actually there. We represented the Pacific Rim for the Olympics. I just remember we represented the Pacific Rim. Bon Jovi represented America. And some other acts, just being all there. And it was just, I just loved it. I mean, I love the fact that we went to Korea and to be a part of that and to represent our own people, the Polynesian people, at the Olympics was great.
Wow. What year was that?
1988, the Olympics.
Wow.
And so it was great to be there, to be a part of that whole thing.
Wow. So, you know, Rudy, which of the three MCA albums would be your favorite, personal?
I think my favorite one is Magic, because Magic, we were at a point where we get to help choose the songs. The first album, our manager kind of led the way because we were very inexperienced. And now it was all about us being able to participate. I also like Believe, because Believe was it was basically us having to participate in. Actually, my brother wrote a song that's on the album there. And then when we left MCA Records, we finally was able to do a whole album on our own called the Love People album that has not been released. And so we found out the hard way that what happens when you try to get a record out there, even though you have a name, but if you don't have a big machinery or record label behind you, it is really hard. And that was in the mid-90s when that happened.
Yeah, I see it listed here, actually. So that never really was released?
That was never really released. And but you can hear all the songs. You can YouTube all the songs, and they're there. So,
yeah. Okay. And then I see also Love Will Lead the Way a few years later.
Yeah, and that was a song we did on a label that's Shadow Mountain is the name of the label. It's more of a kind of a Christian record.
And in 06, Versatility. And 2014, Reunited.
Yes. Reunited was our last album we did before our group. We had some differences with part of the group. And so now we're two different groups right now. There are two Jets. There's me and my brothers who have a Jets group, and my sister who had a Jets group. And we came to do that song, and then we had creative differences on how to approach going forward.
So how many siblings in each?
So there are four of them that went with my sister, and three of us brothers stayed together, and we have our show here in Vegas, and we do our own Jets. And our Jets are more, we wanted people to kind of, we're a band. And so what we do is, when people come see our show, they're actually seeing a live band do a live show. My sister's group, She does live, but hers more of a track show. And so that's the difference between both of the groups. We take people back to the past, and her show is more of the Jets now. You know, their mothers, they, you know, it's more of a sit down and share that kind of a feeling to her concert. And they're both good. They both are different, but they're good.
So you have a female vocalist, though, that do those songs?
As you know, we have 10 sisters. So one of my sisters sings the songs of my sisters, and we have a cousin who's an amazing singer, and she sings in our show. And it's the show is, you know, we both own the names, both my sister and I. We both own the show, and so we just have singers singing for us. Now, my sister who sang all the hits, Elizabeth, she's kind of retired. Even though she works with my other sister, but she rarely goes out and sings. So my sister Moana is the main singer of that group.
And you said Planet Hollywood, correct?
So yeah, our show's at Planet Hollywood, and the name of the show is the Jets 80s 90s Experience. So when you come see our show, you're going back in time, and we're excited that we get to perform that show.
How many shows are you doing a week?
We used to do 5. Now we're down to 1. During the winter months, we do 1 show every Tuesday, which gives us the ability to go do other shows in the weekends all across the country.
Okay.
So we do casinos and we do things here and there. But again, when you come see the Jets, our show, you're seeing a live band. You're seeing the way it was back in the 80s, but today.
Do you also do any other material or just purely Jets?
So no, we like I said, we take them back to the 80s and the 90s. We do all genres. We do rock. We do R&B. And we take him on a world tour, a whirlwind tour of what it was like to be in the 80s. So we do a section of rock. We do a section of R&B. We do a Minneapolis sound. And we just do everything. And people love it. We got an award, one of the best shows here. And what's amazing about our show is that a lot of people come see our show and they come back over and over because they want to experience what they just saw. And felt, because we, like I said, you have to experience to believe it. Once you come, you'll know what I mean. You're going to see the Jets, but you're also going to hear our own hits, but you're also going to go back in time, back to that time period.
And is there some place online where people can keep track of what you're up to?
Yeah, go to Facebook, the Jets band. The Jets official band, you can go there and just thejetsband.com is coming up. We're going to put that back together, but you can go online to the Facebook, the Jets 80s 90s Experience, you can see us there. Just Google the Jets 80s 90s and you'll get a lot of information there as we go forward.
Fantastic. So last question is, if you're able to, what Jets track is your favorite and why?
Oh, wow. My favorite Jets track is Anytime. I love that song. It's a song that was written by the guy who wrote You Got It All. And it's a great song. It's a ballad that I believe was... like I said, it was released, and unfortunately, it wasn't a hit here, but it was a big hit overseas in the Philippines. That's one of my favorite tracks.
To what extent did you guys get to tour the world?
Like I said, we went through 3 world tours, and we tour here and there, not in one whole section, but right now, like, we will go and tour in one country. Like, we'll go to Japan and tour there for a while, come back. We'll go to the Philippines, do that, and come back. We stay a lot here in America travel all over in different markets, Texas, a lot in California, a lot of Florida. And so those are kind of the markets that bring us back all the time.
Very cool. Well, so glad you're still keeping it alive. And is there any other parting wishes for your fans you'd like to express?
No, just, you know, I just want our fans to know that, you know, we're very lucky. I feel very blessed to be a part of the 80s. When I look back and see the time period that we were in and looking at music and life, I'm just grateful that I got to experience the 80s, that I was part of the music scene back then, part of the Minneapolis sound, to meet all of these different people, to meet Bon Jovi, to meet even people that were not part of my genre of music, but just to meet them, Kenny G, just other artists of that time period. And they know us and we know them. It's just amazing, you know, to be able to go back in time and experience how it was, and just loving the fact that we were able to rub shoulders with, you know, Boy George, and he wrote us a song. He actually is responsible for us getting our record deal. He wrote us a song that helped us on our demo. And just to be able to be a part of that whole time period, I revel in it because I'm just grateful. You know, when I look back, all my happy memories are from that time period.
I bet you never imagined that 40 years later, you'd still be doing those songs.
Yes. Never imagine that it's bigger now than it was back then. You know, when I look at kids going, man, I wish I lived in your era. And it's just a blessing. Yeah. I'm glad too. So
it was also the golden age of the music video too.
Yep. It was a golden age for a lot of things, you know, the rap coming in, new wave, just, you know, rock, just, it was just the hair bands from all of that, the pop, Michael Jackson, Prince,
Madonna.
Yeah. Just, you know, just, you had all, but Bon Jovi, you know, Van Halen. Oh my gosh. I love it. You know, I love all of it.
All right, Rudy, it's been a blast. Thank you so much for doing this.
Well, thank you. And thank you for, you know, we were trying to get together all this time, and I'm so glad it happened, even that we had issues just getting the Zoom together. But I'm grateful that you're doing what you're doing and living, you know, and breathing the music industry and giving people like us the opportunity to come and talk. And you get to know us better and see the real us. I think it's great that you have this podcast, and glad to be a part of it.
Fantastic. But you take good care.
Yep. Take care.
I'll keep an eye out when I'm in Vegas. I get out there every now and then. So
in Vegas, let me know. Well, you'll come see our show.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Truth and Rhythm. A big thank you goes out to our guest, as well as to you, the viewer and listener. Also, much gratitude to Pleasure for supplying the show's funky opening and closing music. As a reminder, you can always access the complete list of linked shows by episode at funkinstuff.net. I urge you to support this program and receive the extra benefits along with that by subscribing to the Funkin' Stuff channel on YouTube and sharing it with funk, R&B, and jazz lovers, joining Truth and Rhythm's membership program at Patreon, submitting a donation at funkinstuff.net, buying Everything is on the One, the First Guide to Funk book at Amazon, shopping at the Funky Things store for cool merchandise at funkinstuff.net, and linking through funkinstuff.net for all of your Amazon purchases. In addition, if you're an artist or anyone seeking proven, results-oriented professional marketing, PR, writing, or editing consultation or production, check out the media services section at funkinstuff.net. Also, I encourage you to drop me a line at scottg@funkinstuff.net. I love the feedback, suggestions, guest requests, appearance and sponsorship inquiries, and just talking about my favorite subject, groove-based music. For now, and as always, this is Scott Dr. GX Goldfein saying, keep on vibing to the rhythm of the one.